Wishing and hoping and thinking and praying, planning and dreaming each night of his charms that won't get you into his arms. So if you're looking for
this is probably going to be the most painful episode of Invasion of the Remake I have ever done. It has been not a secret at this point. If you've listened to the past 25 episodes, this is actually episode 25. Mm-hmm. If you've gotten through the 24 episodes, at this point, you already know my feeling about romantic comedies and comedy in general. And this is probably a really good example of the most generic type of romantic comedy that plagued the 90s and gave Julia Roberts a massive career. And of course, I'm talking about My Best Friend's Wedding from 1997, mm-hmm. which might actually make this one of the newest movies we've covered as well.
No, The Departed was 2006. The Departed was 2006.
That's true, but you know, this is a movie we're remaking, not...
I guess, yeah.
Yeah. Actually opened as number two at the theaters behind a movie I'd much rather be talking about. Batman and Robin was number one.
Lost out to Batman and Robin. I think that tells you everything you need to know.
That's right. But it was budgeted for $46 million, most of which probably went to Julie Roberts at that point.
Yeah.
And had a worldwide gross of $286.9 million. So it was a huge success for Julia again. And
it was like $4 to go to the movies, so a lot of people saw this movie.
Yes. Yeah, make that much money.
Yeah. Jeff McNair, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
Trish Coughlin, everybody.
Hey, everybody. And I have brought a friend today. One of the best comics in Calgary, one of my personal favorites, Brittany Lysing.
What's up, everybody?
We haven't done the plague golf clap in a while.
No, we haven't done that.
Podcasting is no clapping now.
Yeah, I invited Brittany because she's familiar with this movie, love this movie, but as we rewatch it, there's so much wrong with it.
I question your judgment.
There's so much wrong with it.
From the intro I just played.
Yeah.
this opening music video of, oh, God, I don't know. Even as a man, I'm offended by this song because it really sounds like the only thing that a woman wants is to find a man.
I know.
And like hoping and praying that she will find that guy.
And do
that's that song.
And praying.
Yeah, and just like doing only things that he wants to do. Do your hair just for him is like going, I'm sorry, but like, like putting that much into like one person in a relationship, that's a recipe for a murder-suicide.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was trying to think about remaking this movie, how I could turn it into a horror movie, or, well, honestly, my mission instead of remaking it would probably be to wipe it off the planet, but...
Such strong feelings about a romantic comedy from the 90s.
I know.
Aggressive hatred.
It is. This was directed by P.J. Hogan, who directed Muriel's Wedding and Peter Pan, which I actually did like.
And Muriel's Wedding, actually pretty good.
Yeah. It was written by the man who gave us...
This boggles my mind.
I know. It does me too. Rain Man, What Dreams May Come, and the man who brought us Catherine Zeta-Jones' incredible ass in Entrapment. And that's Ronald Bass.
How can someone... And What Dreams May Come, which is probably one of the most heart-wrenching, tear-jerking movies ever written, can pen this fucking tripe.
I agree.
That's in my notes. The word tripe. Right here. Read it. Yeah. Tripe.
He's got,
some harsh words on this
list. To be fair, it was one of the first, like, it's probably the earlier in his career. This is, I'd say, paycheck movie.
Midway.
Really? Yeah. Midway?
This is after Rain Man.
Oh, God, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And Rain Man was definitely a better movie.
Definitely needed to rewrite this. Definitely.
I feel like he for sure phoned this one in. Like, it was a paycheck movie.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
I wound up
for the money
texting Jeff while I was watching it. In my infinite pain, I wasn't even halfway. After I got done texting Jeff and I'm looking at the time on this thing, I'm like, oh, fuck, I got another 45 minutes of this goddamn thing.
Yeah, I actually, I paused the movie to see
what started time talking
it was.
About torture porn somewhere along the way.
Yeah, you said you needed torture porn to cleanse your palate. Of Julia Roberts.
Yeah, Julia Roberts bugs me in every way possible.
She did look incredible in this movie.
She does, but there's a major problem with it. She's over 30.
No, she's 30.
She's playing 26.
She's playing, she's playing 27.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, she looks in her 30s. She does.
Cameron Diaz is playing 20.
Yeah, but I think she was close to 20.
She's 25.
Yeah.
She's 25.
She's 25, yeah.
Yeah, but she's playing 20.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is like, they look...
She certainly acts like it.
Yeah, I checked when Julia Roberts was born, because I was trying to, like, make this college connection, and I'm like, no, Julia Roberts, like, 97 is, like, 52, right? And she was 30. Because she just seems, like, perpetually old to me, and it's not that, like... I don't know how to describe it. She's not good-looking, or she doesn't look aged, but she doesn't look young.
Yeah, she doesn't look like the girl next door like they try to, you know, always portray her as.
I think when she's one of those people who, like, she has to grow into her age. Like, have you met that person who's like, you think they're 30 and they're 25? It's like they're just not the right age yet. Like, I think as she grew into it, like, I think her features probably more awkward as she was younger, but, like, as she's grown to, like, where she is now, everything kind of fits right, but she has to be a bit older for everything to fit.
I don't know,
right.
I felt like outside of her hair, she was quite attractive in this movie.
Oh, no, she's very attractive. Yeah. I just felt you can sense that she's older than what they're trying to say.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
for sure. It seemed like they had this, like, if they're at college age or whatever.
It should have been Flatliners Julia Roberts, you know?
Yeah.
How can, like, her and, that fucking hair lip guy, whatever his name is.
Dermot Mulroney.
Yeah.
Love Dermot Mulroney.
He looks like he's 40.
I love
40.
Him not in this
movie.
Yeah,
he looks old in this movie.
He looks way old. And, I just, like, trying to put it together that they've known each other for 9 years. So it's, like, they're, like, 1 month thing that she's obsessed with. They were, like, 15.
Yeah. No, they were like 19. It was like they were in university is what they put it as.
The timeline is skewed.
But the timeline is really weird and skewed. I think what they should have done is it should have been like the pact would have been like, if we're not married by the time we're 35, like have them play a little older. Yeah, but it would have made like 28 just to pull the trigger that soon seems stupid.
Yeah.
Well, maybe she thought her ovaries were going to dry up by 31. So.
Well, and I, you know, when this movie opens, I really thought she was going to be a much crueler, manipulative character. Yeah. I mean, she is manipulative.
She's terrible.
In a very subtle and fake kind of way, like always smiling and being nice to people.
Yeah.
But she's the way the kitchen reacts, she's a food critic.
Yes.
And the way everybody's cringing at her being there. And this is something I actually wanted to put in the... If we were to remake this, I would have Gordon Ramsay, the most meanest guy on
that
the planet,
would be awesome.
Cowering in the kitchen.
Be like, she can destroy us in one review.
So that might actually be the entirety of my remake, but...
Well, the head chef, like, threatened that, like, you know, immigrant worker's family with death if he didn't prepare whatever steak tartare thing. So, yeah, it seemed like just a harsh restaurant. I forgot about that. That's a throwaway scene. That scene does not matter.
Not at all. It's just to show you what her career is and to set up her editor.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
so
it.
This is something that I have a hard time paying attention, but was the editor gay in the movie?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, it took a while for...
He does say
I honestly didn't pick up on it until he has that dinner that she interrupts with the phone call on the message machine.
I thought it was a family dinner. I didn't
know. Well... The opposite sides. I'm like, oh, he's gay.
I didn't pick that up. I thought that they were going to have their little love-in at the end, which they, like, it kind of is. Like,
oh, I feel like he flips back and forth in this movie.
If you, like me, drift in and out during romantic comedies, it really appeared like they had, like, some unspoken thing the whole way through and that they ended up together at the end.
Yeah.
Which actually sort of infuriated
me. The original cut is she meets another man at the wedding and then it's supposed to be that this might be her future with this dude. And it didn't test well because everybody wanted more Rupert Everett.
Of course.
So right. they had him do this weird show up thing at the end, but yeah, we're skipping really way ahead. Yeah. But it was a good scene. I actually wanted more Rupert Everett in this movie because he's actually was really good. He had a fun character in this movie.
He's fun. He's interesting. He's also the voice of reason.
He's just humoring her most of the
time. Yeah. But he's often that part where as an audience, you're like going, good God, won't somebody just explain this to her? And mm-hmm. that's what he is.
Every time he gets drawn in, he makes her pay for it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Because, yeah, by that time, we're so
my
kind
of dude. Yeah. Revenge.
Oh, I love his vengeance.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you like Rupert Everett. I could see that being like, it's the better relationship. Like, what's funny is, like, it talks about my best friend's wedding, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think this guy is her best friend. I think Rupert Everett's her best friend.
Oh, yeah. The whole way through, I'm thinking, like, you're assessing your relationships wrong. It sounds like you didn't even know your best friend was dating anybody. But she goes into this big diatribe, but in that meeting with George in that opening scene, and it felt like she was reciting like a novel. It was such awkward dialogue. It didn't feel in place. Like they were just trying to shove a shit ton of information at you all at once. And
yeah, just a monologue of exposition.
Yeah.
Is what they put
and there's
in there.
One other scene in the movie that's like that too, near the end. And I'm like, oh, for fuck's sakes. Like this just feels like you're reading three pages of some novel.
Like, we don't need to know this much about this little.
Yeah.
No.
Like,
like, it's sort of like, this is your best friend. We can establish that without all of this. Like, I think they're trying to justify why she would love this guy.
But they never do. In fact, this is something that bothered me, and I don't know if, again, because I drifted out during romantic comedies, that he doesn't have any, whatever his name, the McDermott guy, his character?
Michael
does not have any positive characteristics in this entire movie. The first thing you hear...
Neither does Julianne.
No, but she's a shitty character the whole way through the movie, so I get that. But why are both of these girls so enamored with her? The first interaction they have, all Cameron Diaz does is prattle off a list of problems, and she's like, but I looked past it.
Yeah.
And then she's like, yeah, it didn't work out for us, but I'm in love with him and I'm going to like sabotage this wedding. And then
when she decides over dinner that because she's just suddenly gets this insane jealousy that just happens like snap, done.
I don't get it. You haven't spoken to him in over a month.
No, she's got some crazy bipolar issues.
I think it's also that she's just...
This is a movie about mental illness, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. It's a movie about mental illness. It's a movie about people like just going into like bad marriages. Like the perfect ending of this movie is that wedding does not happen because this is nothing but bad news for Cameron Diaz's character.
She's the only... aside from celebrated character actor and the only good moments for me in this movie, which is 40 seconds on screen, but M. Emmett Walsh.
Yes.
Aside from M. Emmett Walsh being the best character in the movie, and he's only on screen for 40 seconds.
I'll also give you Paul Giamatti to for his
bellboy
minute.
He's
and a half.
Bellboy. I forgot he was in this movie, but that's a memorable minute, guys.
It is a memorable minute.
There's because
just because
I like
60
seconds of pure gold.
Yeah,
you have two seasoned, excellent actors who aren't used.
No.
But the only other likable character in the whole movie, Rupert Everett, he's likable. But, like, Cameron Diaz is generally, like, a good-hearted character. But she's, like, the only one in the whatever weird universe they live in.
But she's so weak, she drives me nuts.
No, that scene in the... you know what? I'm going to run the trailer and subject our audience to my personal hell. And then we will get back to this, because I have
Should I apologize to the audience at this time that this was all my idea?
It certainly wasn't mine. It was a threat that I just figured she's going to subject this to me and she won't shut up about it until I say yes. So let's just get it out of the way.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to run the trailer and I'm going to apologize in advance.
Michael and Julianne have been best friends for years.
The one constant thing in my life is that he'll always be there.
But they were never more than that.
Call me 4 a.m, whatever, we gotta talk.
Until he popped the question.
I called because I met someone.
To someone else.
Well.
We're getting married.
He was in love with me every day for 9 years. Me!
I can see why.
Look, she has known him for what, 5 seconds? I can't lose him, George. I'm a busy girl. I've got 4 days to break up a wedding and steal the bride's feather. Oh!
See me girl with the diamond ring. She knows how to.
You know, I've never had a sister. All I've ever heard is Julianne this and Julianne that.
Michael and I were a wrong fit right from the start.
He said that too.
George, she's toast.
The only fear she really has is you.
So this means that I have 4 days to make you my new best friend and be my maid of honor.
What?
Why not? You're practically the best man anyway.
I just asked myself, what would Lucy Ricardo do in this situation?
Who's that guy?
I told him, George. If we're engaged, why be ashamed of it, right?
There's something wrong.
It's just a big surprise.
We thought you were a lesbian.
We have to talk about George.
You're jealous?
Crazy jealous.
Personally, I think Mr. Michael's marrying the wrong girl.
Just tell him you love him.
I realize this comes at a very inopportune time. Marry me.
The moment I wake up, before you put on your makeup.
TriStar Pictures presents.
I'm the bad guy.
A story about finding the love of your life.
Do you really love him?
And deciding.
Or is this just about winning?
What to do about it.
I trusted you. Just tell me what.
Why did you trust me?
No, why did you pretend to be my friend?
Julia Roberts.
Oh.
Dermot Mulroney and Cameron Diaz.
My honey, I will love you forever.
Yeah, Michael!
Lovely together.
My best friend's wedding.
Michael!
That's our maid of honor. She's from New York.
I am so sorry.
No, let's be honest. It's my fault this happened. But
this was a huge hit, though. Like,
it's a huge hit.
I just think people were really dumb in the 90s. I think about a lot of 90s movies, and I got sick of the action tropes. That everything was so formulaic in the 90s. And yes. As we were talking prior to recording, the only standout stuff, which I think built a lot of great careers, was a lot of indie films happening that were taking the world by surprise because they're the only ones that were giving us anything interesting in the 90s.
I was strictly watching indies.
There are
mostly
exceptions to these rules. Obviously, it's not an entire decade of crap, but it's a large decade of crap.
Tons.
Yeah, there's definitely some good stuff. I mean,
yeah, I think, well, what happened with this movie, and this is what made me think of it the most, is because they were trying to, and when they promoted this, I remember this, Cameron Diaz and Julia Roberts and Dermot Mulroney were on, like, Oprah. I remember promoting it and saying how wonderful it was. I'm like, oh, we've totally changed up the romantic comedy. I'm like going, yeah, but not really for the better.
Yeah, they kind of took the thing that you wanted to happen and then didn't make it happen.
Yeah.
I feel like the whole time you're watching that movie, you're waiting for something good to happen to somebody. And the whole time, it's like, you're like, this is awful.
The only thing they changed about the romantic comedy formula is they just used awful people.
Yeah, like, it's sort of, I can
not
get...
Not awful actors, these are great actors
being
playing
awful
characters.
Like, like you said before, why are they fighting over this guy?
Yeah.
He's a bully. He's an asshole. He doesn't compromise a fucking inch.
Yeah, when they have that weird moment about the career thing.
Oh yeah, yeah. And he was ready to call off the wedding.
Zero to like abusive in a second.
Everybody's like a bipolar or schizophrenic.
But
what's
funny is when Julia Roberts, part of her manipulation is to point out, she's like, "Well, Kimmy's giving up everything for you to follow you on the stupid job," and like in the movie, it's supposed to be like her smart way of showing him she's wrong for him, but when you listen to it again, it sounds like she's just pointing out to her friend, you're an asshole. Like, if I were to rewrite this movie, I'd make it very clear that it's like, it's not so much she's in love with her best friend. I think a better rewrite of this movie is where she helps her best friend grow up and become a human being, or helps stop this wedding because she's like, oh, this is a bad idea. I didn't realize my best friend was a dickbag. Like, he's a horrible, horrible person.
Yeah.
And like, I also want the parents don't seem to give a crap either. Like, I want also another kind of this movie where the parents are like going, our daughter's marrying this really, really manipulative guy.
Well, it all seems like
all rich entitled assholes. Go ahead.
That's what it seems like. They're like, oh, it's good that she's finally met a man.
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole point of this movie, is that they're like, oh, well, she'll fall in love and everything will be okay.
Yeah, she was studying to be an architect, but luckily she met this baseball writer who doesn't get his stuff published every time.
Thank God.
Thank God she could have done something with her life. Oh, close call, guys.
They're more proud of her. They're like, oh, I can hardly wait for her to drop out of architect school.
Yeah. She's like, she had a fucking future. Like, yeah. The whole undertone of this movie when I watched it again was like going, this guy, the reason he's having her drop out is because he knows for a fact that she's not good enough. Like, he's not good enough for her. And if he can make her just, like, lose everything that makes her great, he can bring her down to his level.
She was on the verge of having a personality.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
She's, what, a year away from her degree? And
yeah.
You know, wealthy parents who, yeah, the parents really were, like, completely oblivious to whatever was happening. Also, why is there so many fucking musical numbers in this thing?
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Why is that a thing?
Like, it opens with this weird musical number with a bunch of women that we never see again.
Nope. No.
I don't understand it even now. And then there was the dinner scene. There was the really bad karaoke.
Yep.
Which I was something that was backfired. You know, she sounds terrible. Bar's making fun of her, but she keeps going. And then, of course, anybody's been to karaoke. Yeah. If you plug away, they'll respect you for it.
Yeah. There's something.
I actually felt like that was the most realistic part of the movie, actually.
Yeah. Other than you could tell that she was like doing her best to sing badly, like it felt forced.
It did,
because Cameron Diaz can sing. Like, she's on soundtracks for lots of stuff, and she was Fiona in Shrek and whatever, right? Like, she can sing. So I felt like
First role, The Mask, she was singing.
Did she sing in The Mask?
I don't think she was singing. No? I think she's always had dubbed somebody. Over? She's always dubbed over.
Oh, maybe.
She's a great dancer, though.
No, she does sing.
Like, this is one of the movies she doesn't dance in. But every other movie, she's dancing, and she's a good dancer.
She's even in this movie, because I had it, like, in the back of my mind. I'm like, no, Cameron Diaz can sing, and this feels really forced. And I like, you know, checked her IMDb or whatever, and she is actually credited in this movie as singing that song.
Oh.
But there's other movies where she has sung songs on the soundtrack and stuff, so she can she can sing. But yeah, I felt forced. But I get that, like, at karaoke, if someone's terrible but they're just giving her, then yeah, everybody loves it and whatever. I don't think it's like a relationship solidifying moment. Yeah.
I know, right?
I can guarantee you my wife will back me up on this, because I've tried. But yeah, it was just...
You mean this romantic comedy lied to you about karaoke and how it would affect your relationship?
That's the thing that I take away from this movie.
Is the karaoke lies. Yeah. That's what we hated.
The karaoke is a lie, everyone. God damn it.
You'll never win anybody over with karaoke.
You will not. Unless you're that guy that got picked to sing for Journey, it's just... That was like a one-shot
deal. Oh, God.
Yeah. That was a one-shot deal. But that was a weird... Every scene in this, I think I made a note that this movie isn't so much of a comedy as it's like a dialogue piece with horrible characters that uses awkward situations and then really misplaced physical comedy to try and get a laugh. But like, why does Julia Roberts fall out of that chair?
There's no reason for it.
Yeah.
Like, you can't sit in a fucking office chair?
I think...
Do you need a helmet? Yeah. Did you escape a mental institution and that's why all of this whole movie is happening?
Rupert Everett winds up getting a few chuckles because of just his that proper British voice of his and that dry delivery. Everything kind of works. He gets away because he says it with a smirk or whatever. So that subtle humor kind of pokes through. But the only funny moment that I'm like, oh, I want more of that, is when one of the bridesmaids was stuck off a David, an ice sculpture of David, and her lips were
stuck to the special part of David.
Yeah, the special part,
which is funny because
I felt like they needed more of that.
Yeah,
yeah, but that was a throwaway scene.
It was a total throwaway scene. It was the funniest scene in the whole fucking movie.
There was one. Heather was a trooper. She hates these kind of movies too, and she tried to watch it with me. And there was one scene where we both like went ha ha. And it was Rupert Everett, and I wish I could remember what it was. I should have made a note of it, because it was the only time I laughed during that movie. But, yeah, like, I didn't find anything funny. I found everything out of place. Like why?
I did like when he showed up in the middle of the film after one of many panicked phone calls.
Yeah.
And she says, oh, this is suddenly out of the blue, he's her fiancé.
Yeah.
And, boy, does he make her pay for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that whole... bit was pretty funny, and in the car where he's like, oh, I am gay, and he's like, oh, he just tells everybody that. Like, what?
See, what is that? He pretends to be gay to get women. Who came up with that in the writer's room?
I feel like this is all so, it's so poorly written, because it's obviously, you know, like when you look at Cameron Diaz's character and how weak she is and everything like that, it's written by just a complete misogynist.
Yes.
Who's just like, and this is how women think. Like, the way he's written it. I don't know. That's because there's a lot of scenes like that where I was like, oh, like, this is so out of place.
It definitely comes off that way, but knowing this guy's other work, I don't feel like that is where that comes from.
But it, like, what we're saying is, like, it, that's exactly how this feels. Like, it feels like a misogynist.
Yeah. Well, something could be different on paper and interpreted differently by the director, so I'm not going to say, let's not give it all the blame.
Well, they do to, go, well, here's the other thing. They do go on about her being perfect, but she's perfect because she doesn't want to inflict her own feelings or desires or wants on this guy. She's perfect. Like, she's a Stepford wife is how she's written.
I know. I was like, put your pearls back on, June Cleaver. Fucking get back in the kitchen and get some shit done. That's how this whole, that's that.
That's how it looks. And she never does.
No.
She never gets in the kitchen. What does she even do? Do we even know? She floats around and cries about stuff.
And for being an architect, she's so stupid.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, it's like too many ideas that don't work together. Like, if she's an architect, she's a smart person. She's an intelligent, you know, educated person. And then everything she says and does, she's like, the whole time. You're like, none of this makes sense.
Or awkward cries.
Or to be fair, like, I don't know, maybe it's because I just remember being younger. Maybe it's supposed to be a stupid 20-year-old. Maybe that's the point. Right. So, like, you got to get them young so they're dumb enough not to realize that this is a bad idea.
And they are all so dumb. Oh, my God.
That's what I did.
Now, last week we talked about the Bechdel test for Star Wars.
Does it pass? It's a pass.
I feel like this needs to come up again, and I'm wondering if Jeff and his research found a porn parody. But well, let's talk about the Bechdel test
for Star Wars.
Yeah, the Bechdel test, where it's you have to have two female characters, and they both have names, and they talk about something other than a man. Does this pass?
Wait, do the bridesmaids ever say anything? Or just giggle?
No, because the other thing is the bridesmaids self-identify as been told by Cameron Diaz that they're vengeful sluts. So there's a lot of slut shaming in here too. They're like going, hey, you know what? We haven't made women look bad enough. Let's give us a little bit of slut shaming in here. Just toss that on top for no reason.
Okay. That so actually brings
bridesmaids was like Brenda from Six Feet Under.
Yes, Rachel Griffiths, who's in Muriel's Wedding.
She's a great actress.
She's a phenomenal actress.
And she's terrible in this movie.
Yeah. She's underused. Like,
Let's get back to because I want to get to their introduction. But we got to talk about the elevator scene first.
Oh, yes.
I think everybody in this movie is somewhat unhinged. And again, as you said, this is a movie about mental illness. As Cameron Diaz is having a private moment with Julia Roberts in the elevator as the bride and the best friend, who she admits, like, I can never measure up to you in his mind.
Yeah.
That's what Cameron Diaz is saying. And she stops the elevator like a crazy person. So
yeah, but then alarms go off
when you do that.
Yeah.
But then Julia Roberts gets all crazy and starts pacing around. Like,
she's
apparently,
she's obviously got some claustrophobia issues.
Also, just as a note, you can't stop elevators.
Oh yes, we have
in fictional films. You can.
No, I'm an elevator. Yeah, I'm an elevator mechanic by day.
Oh wow!
So there's just it's like an insane safety concern. You cannot just press a button to stop an elevator mid-flight. it's so hilarious to me. And then that you know, just like somebody having a bad feelings day can just put everybody else's life in jeopardy. It's so silly.
Yeah, like you need a key, don't you? Even to
no, you just can't stop it mid-flight. Like, I mean, you could. There's safety mechanisms, like if a door opened,
mm-hmm.
it would shut down. If something, you know, but it has to be like, you can't just Just a person riding an elevator can't just decide to stop it in the middle of it.
Well, assuming somehow she did, in, like, in a fictional world where every phone number starts with 555 and yeah. elevators can yeah. be stopped at a press of a button, assuming that she could, it feels like a really, like, the start of a very sociopathic moment. She's going to pull out a knife on...
I know, right? Right.
It just, yeah. I feel like there's a murder about
which would have made it a better
scene.
Movie.
Oh, God, yeah.
I would have liked it that it's like, Julia Roberts is trying to steal this chick's man, but she finds out, and then Cameron Diaz goes insane. Like, just tries to, like, just destroy her life.
I feel like
her.
This movie...
If it was a Hitchcock movie, it would just all take place in the elevator.
No, that's M. Night Shyamalan.
It would be like Rope, but with, like, Julia right? Where it's just, like, them, like, plotting with each other.
This should be the shit is on moment, where they're like, bitch, this is on. They're very self-aware of what their goals are. Yeah. And it becomes like Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and they're both trying to murder each other for the rest of the movie. That's my remake. Yeah. Right? Like, I would watch the shit out of that movie.
The lights go off in the elevator and come
Julia
back on.
Julia Roberts is Wile E. Coyote.
Yes, there we go.
She's got it's nothing but acne on her luggage.
You have Cameron Diaz at the end of Very Bad Things. That would be very good.
So they opens up the elevator into the penthouse because it's fucking rich people and just spills over into our two bridesmaids. Yeah. And they're like, oh, Julia Roberts is on the floor. Oh, look, it's the best friend who's the bride will never measure up to. Yeah. That's how they introduce
and
themselves.
And the woman the bride will never measure up to. It's like going, oh.
I'm like, holy shit. It's like, these are terrible people. There's nobody likable in this room.
But there's never a moment from Mike, whatever, the quote-unquote love interest. There's never a moment where he really gives Julia Roberts a whole lot of thought. Like, he's, like, mm-hmm. fairly focused on Cameron Diaz. Yes. So, like, at what point during their courtship of whatever, less than a year, does he, like, continually bring her up? Because he wasn't even, like, super excited to see her or anything.
No.
He didn't give a shit.
Yeah. I think part of this is a mental illness myth. I think the epic romance that is the two of them and their relationship is all in Julia Roberts' mind.
Yeah, well, she's obsessed about the promise that they made to each other when they were kids. Yeah. Like, if we're not married by 28, then... And she was weeks off her 28th birthday. She's like, oh, shit, he's not going to keep his promise.
Yeah.
Wait, that's your motivation? The fact that you've had nothing but failed relationships up to this point, and that's the moment you think you're in love with this guy? No, you're just crazy. No.
Yeah. It's just, it's not right. And it's like, here's the thing, is who makes that deal or thinks it's a good idea to go through with it? Like, hey, you want to do something that's better than nothing? how do you feel about being my only other option? Like, it's just... Oh, the romance.
The world went to shit. Yeah, I'll settle for you.
I feel like we're stuck in a Monkees song. Wouldn't it be great if we were together? Yeah. Then we wouldn't have to wait so long. I just have sung in the last three episodes, so I wanted to keep that going. But,
well, the fact that
why wasn't that song one of the sing-alongs?
And let's face it, there are so many out of place musical moments in this movie. Why won't we have one in the podcast?
Like, remember when, like, little brother, who I actually thought was gonna, like, you know, hook up with Julia Roberts, even though it's a 25 year age difference, that they have that weird moment where they're all huffing helium with his like super 90s friends with their earrings and stuff, and then they, like, break out into song. I live a life, and anybody who knows me will back this up, that I break out into song a lot, and songs happen around me, but, like, it doesn't make sense in this movie.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. My life is a Disney movie, and this movie doesn't make sense to me.
Yes, every inanimate object in his house has a face on it.
It has a face. Silently judge me.
Oh, it's like your tie this morning was put speaking on by of, birds coming through windows.
My tie was put on by birds.
Speaking of mental illness.
You know, birds entering the household while my wife does chores is a thing that has happened in our household more than one time.
That was actually a problem at work this summer. They kept finding their way into the shop.
We had a bird in our kitchen one day, and then a cat came into our house, and, like, I don't know what it was doing, but it, like, ran into the dog and, like, jumped up onto the TV and, like, scratched our TV and, like, was all crazy and, like, all while I'm away. And I'm like, what are you doing? She was like, I was cleaning the house. I'm like, what are you, fucking Snow White?
The true romance is Jeff. Jeff found Snow White.
That's right.
He was wandering through a forest. He found this hut where seven guys lived.
She's just, like, hilariously wrapped up in the clothesline every single day.
Like, the most romantic movies I can think of are all Disney movies, now that Jeff brings that up.
Well, yeah, I mean, they are all on, like, this fairy tale idea of romance, and then when you have things like this that are, like, trying to ground it in reality, it, like, that idea, I think, is, like, a great idea, but it doesn't make sense. It can't work. Like,
and it doesn't like in this movie, not really.
No, nothing in this movie works.
She is going for that ending.
Oh, I was just thinking back to when Trish was talking about Oprah there, when they're saying they discovered a new romantic comedy. It's not romantic,
no.
Or a comedy.
No,
it's neither one of those things. That's what the problem with it. None of this is romantic.
No,
and most of it isn't funny.
Yeah.
So they didn't. It's not.
You know how you give a new life to a romantic comedy is, here's how, like, what they were trying to get at was the idea is, like, you love someone who doesn't love you back, but the romantic thing would be to give them up and let them live a life with somebody else, right? But they have to be A, worth it. B, you don't want to leave thinking, oh no, the person who he ends up with is just going to have a terrible life. Like, you have to, I know what they were trying, but it was terrible. Like, it should have been her realizing that this guy was terrible, like, and she shouldn't love him, and nobody should.
But everybody in this movie should realize that.
Yes.
Like, everybody should. It doesn't make sense.
Now, I just remembered the other massive soliloquy in here that I think was, again, meant to be a romantic moment that nobody's around for, is when Cameron Diaz had caught the two of them kissing and runs off, and Dermot Mulroney's going after him, and there's this whole weird chase sequence, and Julia Roberts steals a bread truck, and anyway, they land up in a train station.
Frustration in that
sentence. And then you get this huge soliloquy about how they proposed in that spot, and that was where he was hoping to find her. And it, again, another soliloquy out of a novel about their relationship. But at no time do they ever do these things when they should matter the most. In fact, Julia Roberts is the one that finds her in the end at her dad's
the luxury box.
She goes to the stadium and she's in the bathroom.
Yeah.
I guess there was a baseball game.
Yeah, in a bathroom where 55 well-dressed women at a baseball game were just hanging out.
They weren't that well-dressed.
Well, I don't know.
There were a few of them where I'm like going, oh yeah, no, that's a baseball outfit.
Yeah, and they start having their moments where it's like, oh, they're going to confront each other. Yeah. And you get all this bullshit from the background with the women going, can't fight, woo! Like, it turns into Jerry Springer.
Yeah. I'm sorry. During that time, the only time you actually see Cameron Diaz's character raise her voice and get a little angry, and then she just forgives near the end, at the end of the whole conversation. I would have fucking punched her in the face.
Yeah.
I would have punched Julie Roberts in the face. I mean, she faked an email with her boss.
Give her
and
a fat lip, but she's already got two.
But I'm bump. Oh, yeah. Damn.
No, it's also, but the whole point is, she's getting mad. And it's like, you tried to steal my man and blah, blah, blah. Like, it's still.
And she's like, yeah, but I
it's
couldn't.
Still.
Every time there's, like, conflict.
Oh, this really
just,
great guy. Yeah. Oh, he's not great.
And then they hug it out every time. And, oh. Like, fucking punch the bitch.
Well, they did. It, another romantic comedy that's not a good one. But.
Are there?
Hey, When Harry Met Sally.
Okay,
still pretty
point
good.
Taken.
But it was the wedding.
10 Things
Planner.
I Hate About You.
Yes, very good.
I like that one.
There was, I think they were trying to make her like that kind of that lovable character you're supposed to really like. Like, oh God, I mean, he's the one stealing him away, but you still really like her. They really failed in this one. Like, failed hard. But there's a movie called The Wedding Planner with like Jennifer Lopez, which not a good movie. But the woman who's like marrying her dream guy, you like her. You get it. You understand it. You're not, she's strong enough. She's independent. Like, I think if they'd written that character in this movie, it would have been a better movie. Like, and that character would have punched Julia Roberts in the face. And that character would have been like, oh, fucking hate. Like, she would have been like, you know what? Even if I don't want to marry this man, that was low. That was underhanded. Hmm. There's no reason to forget.
The worst part is, I don't know if Julia Roberts really learned her lesson so much.
Oh, no, she didn't.
You know, she's just rejected, and she kind of gives up and supports him in his proposal in the wedding. Oh, I know.
I believe that was like a saving face type of deal. It's like, we can't. Well, how do we explain to the guests why there's no maid of honor?
And
like,
she's been there the whole time at that point.
And then let her give a speech.
Yeah, that was a dodgy issue. Yeah. I would have been like, no.
Hey, I've been to weddings where that speech goes horribly wrong. So like, hey, after all of that nonsense.
Yeah. Like, hey, remember that time you tried to fuck my husband? You want to talk about it into a microphone in front of everybody I love?
Yeah,
like, let's it's do an that. Awkward.
Yeah, I've been to that wedding.
Hey, we've all been to that wedding, I think. God, yeah,
they're
no.
divorced now.
No,
he didn't go well.
Surely you jest.
Surely I don't.
I don't. Don't call me Shirley.
Yeah, no. Well, nobody learns their lesson in this movie. Like, zero people.
No, and the only guy who has fun with the whole thing and has no lesson to actually learn is Rupert Everett, because he thinks everybody's fucking insane and he'll be your friend anyway.
But everybody is insane. I know. So did you find it, like, particularly, because I'm running out of things to talk about with this movie, did you find it particularly strange how, like, in the world of 1997, there's only two people with cell phones and they know each other?
Yeah.
It's weird. Yeah. And the cell phone's, like, the size of a Coke bottle.
It yeah, was that was a 97 cell phone. That
she
was.
She whips it out like in dinner. Like, there is no phone etiquette. They're like, I'm writing this review. Oh, hold on, I gotta check my messages. Yeah. Hey, big shot, how you doing? And then Buddy with the book reading and the phone's ringing and he's just sitting there. It's like, you're the only guy in New York with a cell phone. Just answer it.
Hey, who sent the email, the dreaded email?
Oh, God, the email.
She sneaks into the office of
the bride's father.
It was a secretary. You could save it in drafts, and then like it'll sit in your outbox.
The secretary sent it. Okay, because she, rather than erase it, she is even having guilt at this point. Like, no. Ooh, am I really this bad? She's like, well, maybe I'll save it for later in case my conscience goes away.
See, and this is the worst part about it, too, is like I'm reading that email. I'm like going, this is reasonable. Like, the request that, like, oh, I've offered him this job and he won't take it. It's in sports. You are working at a sports place with sports things, with baseball. Like, that's what you've said you liked. And it's fine. Because, like, it's sort of like, I felt that the entire time, like, with him getting offered a job, yeah, sure, it's for your dad. And that's kind of a little iffy. Mm-hmm. But it's reasonable. It's a reasonable request. Like, mm-hmm. The other part, when they're looking, trying to do the gift registry, her and Julia Roberts, that's when Julia Roberts gives her the idea, is when they're trying to get her registry done. Why is she doing a registry? They're never going to be home, apparently. We've already established he doesn't stay anywhere. They're not going to be able to afford a house or basically anything. They're not going to be able to put this anywhere. The whole thing is actually quite reasonable, but they paint it in this movie as like, the most outrageous thing you could possibly do is give somebody an opportunity that's going to be good for them. Oh my God. How dare they?
You're a horrible person.
Yeah, but every single thing in this movie is centered around Michael not having to change anything.
No.
He's like, oh, well, I'll get married, but everything will remain the same. And he's, yeah. And then that's the, like,
yeah, he's completely uncompromising.
He's going to be that dick bag that was like, if they, oh God, if poor Cameron Diaz gets herself knocked up, you're like, oh yeah, sure, we don't have enough money to like care for this child, but damn it, my dreams mean more than that. Yeah. He's going to be that guy. We know that.
No, I can't drive you to the abortion clinic. I got places to be.
Here's a coat hanger.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can't drive you to
borrow it.
I can't drive you to the abortion clinic. There's extra innings going on. I can't possibly
have a match.
Leave.
I got to heat this thing up. I don't know how that works, but that's gross.
Yes. But it's like it's weird. It's reasonable. And what also drove me nuts is like she's writing it, but like I don't get to see the email address. He doesn't have his email address. You have to write out the email address to send it to the email address. You don't just put somebody's name in that they've never talked to before and it'll show up.
Again, the magical world of film with 555 numbers and elevators you can stop at a press of a button.
You can put in an email address. It's been done before.
Not 97, it has.
Hackers?
Hackers.
We need to do
Hackers
that.
Hackers was 95.
Movie.
Hackers was 95.
Uh-huh. I looked back at Hackers. It was
hip, guys.
It was their vision of what they thought computers were going to be. We got to do Hackers at some point because it's batshit crazy. Yeah. I love that movie, but there's a lot wrong with Hackers.
So Brittany, what do you think is there anything redeemable we can find in this movie?
I'm so happy you guys hate this movie, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I feel like I was just... I was
going to
be the only
it.
One.
And I watched it again, and then it made me furious, which is what made me think of this.
I like romantic comedies. Like, I like the story of two people meeting and falling... You know, it's like my one sappy girl thing that I get to do. Is, like, cry at a good... But this one just left me angry. Yes. Like, none of the things, like... Even though it's you know an awful thing, you sort of want Julie. You want them to hook up. You want them to be together, and Cameron Diaz to die in a car crash. You're like, yeah, this will just work out. This will be perfect.
Yeah,
but nothing good happens the whole time.
I'm sure from your guys' seats, like here's my notes. And there's, like, in capital letters,
furious.
Anger, rage, my brain is melting, and a picture of a little skeleton that's kind of cute. that is just...
I know. Yeah, well, I this is illustrative that there's the genre itself is somewhat broken in certain aspects. Mm-hmm. But it's talking about this stuff is like going, well, how do you make a movie, like a good movie about romance and, like, people falling in love, ground it in reality... Give it enough conflict that it's entertaining, but without it falling into something terrible with terrible people. Like, it's a...
That movie was already made. It was called Casablanca.
Ah, yes, true.
That period, that kind of, like, you know, pre- and post-war period, I think is where, like, the romantic ideal works so well. And, like, in a modern setting where, you know, life is so busy and everybody's independent and all this stuff, it just doesn't... It doesn't work. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
I got the feeling that all these people, like, this wedding was about a bunch of people who don't want to be married. Like,
no.
Well, Cameron Diaz did, I think.
She did, but even she says, she had a dream and wanted to do...
Which is why she was dressed the way she was dressed.
Maybe, yeah.
Acted the way she acted and is willing to give up her career for her man. Like, it made sense. She's no Ingrid Bergman, that's all I'm saying.
No.
No. She was handpicked for this movie by Julia Roberts.
Yeah.
I mean, they approached a lot of people, but Julia Roberts kind of cast this movie because so was Rupert Everett, was handpicked for this movie.
Yeah, but he's a good pick.
He steals his scenes.
He knows what he's doing.
He doesn't have enough scenes.
Yeah. Well, that's how that ending scene happened is because the other ending didn't test very well. And people wanted to see more of it. You know? So he shows up out of the blue.
Yeah.
To rescue her out of her depression that she lost.
Well, I think part of it was like, A, you needed more Rupert Everett. People loved that. But B,
he was super charming.
At the end, I think people, why it probably didn't test well was it felt was like, this person was the villain. They can't be happy at the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
We can't give them we can't give them what they want. They have to be punished for what they've done.
Yeah, I
agree with that.
Yeah, the ending makes sense for how the characters act in this movie.
Yeah.
Because if Julia Roberts eliminated Cameron Diaz from the scene, well, that would change the structure of Michael's life, and we know how violently opposed to that he is.
For sure.
So whether or not he wanted to hook up with Julia Roberts, it would be so jarring.
Yeah, he couldn't handle
it. Sense of self, which apparently is quite minute in this movie, that when he's crying on the train platform, he's not worried about Cameron Diaz. He's dreading having to change his life around, and then he just gives up and is like, ah, fuck it, I'll just marry her anyway. She was good in The Mask. It's fine. But
now, I feel like I do need to give a bit of a positive spin on my take on this a little bit.
M. Emmett Walsh.
Again, this is a Rupert Everett scene that I'm thinking of, George's scene. And this is during the chase scene where she steals the bread truck.
Yes.
So she steals the bread truck to chase after Michael, who's chasing after Cameron Diaz. And he's on the phone. Well, who's chasing you?
Yes.
And no, I'm like, that's a really good line and a nice point on the whole film.
That was
who's chasing
only,
you? No one get it.
That's the only competent piece of writing in this movie.
I agree.
I barely, by that point, I was paying attention, and that caught my attention.
Yeah, it stood out so much out of the bad writing of the rest of the film. So I had to bring that up because it was definitely worth mentioning.
But maybe Ronald Bass had the flu or something.
Well, like I said, it's
or
not
some
always
brain
the writer,
fever, so. Encephalitis.
Yeah. Well, and then sometimes you write it and it looks great on the page, but sometimes the page can't be spoken, and there are scenes like that just feel like they're those kind of scenes that should be adapted.
Or to be fair, you can be going through something in your life and you're angry and you write something and the anger comes through.
Yeah.
Like, have you ever been there?
Yeah.
His wife wanted new kitchen cupboards and he's like, I identify with Mike and I don't like change. And
I don't know. Was this just this blind devotion at this point to Julia Roberts movies? I mean, she's fine with what she's doing.
How far along was she?
97. She
was
pretty
huge.
Big. She was making millions and millions.
Oh, I'd say half the budget of this movie went to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this is kind of the Transformers thing. Every one of those is terrible movies. All four of them, moving into five. There's four Transformers movies.
Oh,
and they've made
Mark
a
Wahlberg
fortune
was the
of
last
them.
One.
And people, every time they go, these movies keep making a fortune. And every time, everybody bitches about how bad they are. But they still go.
It's that hope.
So, yeah.
It's the hope that this is the one that'll turn around.
How much would Transformers make if they made a good one?
I know.
Like, look what the bad ones make.
Well, it's like when we were doing the prequels for Star Wars, I was like, I kept seeing them because I'm like, this is the one. This is the one where they turn it all around and it gets good again.
Yeah.
And then it starts and it's like, Misa's still here. Like, well, son of a bitch.
And as you sink into your chair with your buttered popcorn,
here
just
we go
going,
again.
It's the same thing all over again. The relationship I had with George Lucas was the most abusive one of my life. He just kept punching me in the face, and I just kept taking it.
Yeah.
There's a whole documentary about that, actually. It's called The People vs. George Lucas. It's fascinating because it talks about, like, the love-hate relationship that all hardcore fans have with him. But this podcast isn't about
terrible movies. You watch that second trilogy, the prequel trilogy, and you get to the end of it, and it's like, well, I still have Indiana Jones, and then 4 comes out. Fuck! Aliens, really?
Well, like you say, it's like the machete version of watching the films, and then there's like the Indiana Jones ones. You can just ignore that
one. Just ignore that
one. I actually do like that movie. I'm okay with it. It is Spielberg who directed it, after all, and he does like his aliens.
Yeah.
He's a good director. So
but
she's
I can't.
16, I'm just checking now. She's 16 movies in before this movie, not counting TV appearances and Friends or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, early. And, like, some of these, like Mary Riley and The Pelican Brief and Hook and Pretty Woman.
She's
and Steel Magnolias. She's so good. At, like, how did this movie happen?
Yeah.
With such a good writer and such a good cast. I don't understand.
I think I think it's that thing where, like, going, okay, we're going to do a romantic comedy, but we've totally refreshed the genre. It's totally going to be different, Julia. It's not your same run-of-the-bill crap you've been doing.
Right.
This is what we're going to do. Like,
Julia,
you don't end up with the guy. How amazing is that?
Yeah.
Without telling her what her character would be like.
Yeah,
hey,
she's just this passive-aggressive manipulator. And
or without telling her, it's like, the guy you're in love with is not worth it.
Yeah. Well, I think
this is like, you know, this movie, it was remade. It was called Maleficent. You see that?
Oh, my God.
It's like, really solid actress, plays principal character who is a villain, who we don't realize, yeah. who basically is a villain because her love for some douchebag guy isn't reciprocated or worthwhile. That's that whole movie.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
And she doesn't have, well, Maleficent didn't have Rupert Everett.
And then, like, no. the whole Elle Fanning role is Cameron Diaz, because she's the one that you're supposed to love. That's the one that it's basically a relationship between them.
Yeah.
Shit, we've learned nothing.
Oh, good God. Who wrote that one?
At least there was a fucking dragon.
True, true. I can forgive a lot with a movie if you get a dragon. Did you hear me? Did you hear me, The Hobbit?
Yeah, if we have a dragon for 15 seconds, it's going to be awesome.
Oh, I remember.
You had a year to see it, though.
I sat in that theater just fuming when I looked at my friend. I'm like, we're not seeing a fucking dragon, are we?
Yeah, that was me.
She was furious.
She was so upset.
Isn't it the third Hobbit where it like flies in and dies? Like immediately? Like it's you 10 minutes of dragon? Like what, Weta doesn't have the budget to fucking make a dragon?
7 hours of movies, 15 minutes of dragon.
It doesn't take that long to read the book.
No.
Anyway, we're now at the point where we remake this thing.
Yes.
Well, I gotta tell you.
And we already told. I think I've already established that I would just wipe it off the planet. That would be more my mission at this point.
Yes.
But let's face it, it's us, and we can do it better.
For sure.
Because we're smart asses.
Yes.
So, I don't know if. I don't think Jeff really got into casting. I don't know if anybody got into casting.
I had trouble with
this
casting.
This is like. I don't watch these kind of movies, so I don't know how to cast that kind of movie.
Yeah, I actually. My portion of this, aside from like commentary and what you guys are going to say, I'll just get it out of the way now. I didn't think about it because I hated it, and I don't know anything about this genre, and I have nothing to contribute as far as remaking it, because I would, same as you suggested earlier, to completely put it into a different genre that I enjoy or that works, and just disregard this kind of movie. And then it's not really a remake, it's just using the same kind of beats in a different type of movie. But my wife had some things to say about this, and so her remake idea basically was that, like, we had talked about with the elevator and it becoming like a battle between the two. So this woman shows up to try to steal the husband, and Heather stressed that character that was defending the husband was to wear a fur bikini, and that she would chase them in a jungle setting and then spear them in the neck at the end of the movie, proving her dominance over everything and then getting her man at the end. So there you go, Heather. I pitched it.
Awesome.
That was my contribution.
This has been Heather's
fairly
remake.
Heather's remake.
Yeah, and she says she could never do a podcast.
Oh, come on. Yeah,
I know.
She's got
with ideas
on.
Like that. Come on.
She's pretty agitated, too. She's like sweating. And
that one twitchy eye.
Yeah.
That vein that you never see.
So I guess casting that would be Cameron Diaz would be Raquel Welch for bikini. No.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I it clicked for. Yeah, okay.
You know,
50,000 years BC.
10
million. Whatever. I don't give a shit.
Years BC.
She looked awesome.
Ray Harryhausen.
Yep.
True. Last seen dinosaurs.
I know. So good. Great. Dinosaurs. That's what this movie needed.
Yeah.
More dinosaurs.
They needed at least
one in doubt.
8 minutes. How long was it? 2 hours? Fuck.
So it was an hour 45
minutes. Hour 45 minutes. So that's 3.25 minutes of dragon. You could stretch that out a bit for Plasticine dinosaurs. So they take a little longer. So maybe 4 minutes of dinosaurs.
Nice. Yeah, I'd be okay with that. Brittany, do you got ideas about this as a remake? I'm kind of wondering what the Chinese remake is going to be like. There's a Chinese remake that's coming out this year, and other than it exists or being made, that's all I really found
out about.
There's
just like more people on the street when it pans out. That's the Chinese remake.
Everybody's on bicycles.
Yeah. I'd be putting eyes like going, well, we didn't have enough girls back then, so that's why it's two guys fighting over one girl, because it's like going, frick, there's just nobody was having girl babies.
It's 3-1 in this country, guys. Yeah.
We were killing all the girl babies. This is what happens now.
That's pretty dark, Trish.
Yeah, I
what?
Think...
Makes sense.
I'm not saying you're not right.
I think that, I like the idea of it being, there being a little bit more of the two girls actually fighting, actually there being some sort of something surrounding that. You know, I don't know. I, I dislike it so much now that we've picked it apart.
Yeah.
That I'm just like, oh, let's never, nobody remake it, nobody do it.
Now, okay, there's, men and women have different ideas of what romance is and that thing that jerks the heartstrings. And I don't know if Jeff will agree with me, but I feel
mine
like...
Mine are mostly pizza-shaped, but go on.
I feel like it's the movies that do that for me are those things where men show sense of honor and like I'd watch something like Last Samurai.
No, you can't.
And...
Chivalry is misogynistic.
Oh, fuck that.
Well, no, like a sense of... well, chivalry is terrible, but like a sense of honor is... perfectly mm-hmm. decent. Yeah. Like a moral center of some kind would have been nice.
And somebody opening a door for you is misogynistic? Why?
Well, no.
I don't know why. I didn't write the internet.
Oh, no. Like the original code of chivalry with actual knights, if like a woman was accompanied by a knight, one knight to feed the other knight, he was fine to rape the woman that the knight was with.
Oh, that's the... That's
yeah, it's chivalry is not nice.
Okay, no.
Fuck chivalry. No,
I think a modern day of chivalry is, yes, a woman can open her own door, unless she's got her arms full or whatever, then be that good guy, you know? Like,
well, it's about the whole
thing. Pick your moment.
Yeah, pick your moment. But, like, I mean, it's weird. It's those... But the gestures, it's not even that. Like, I mean, honestly, to be good or chivalrous, I count weird stuff. Like, if I'm like living with somebody and I come home and they've done the dishes and I'm just like, because I wasn't looking forward to it. God damn, you're getting the good loving because that's nice.
That one works.
Yeah, it does.
I know.
I come home to a clean house. I'm like, oh, and I like, and you're tired. That's just nice. Like gestures. They don't even have to be big, giant ones. If perfectly practical gestures are wonderful.
It's the same.
Yeah, shit, I cleaned the house and 3 days later, Heather's like, hey, did you clean the house? Like, well, someone had to fucking do it.
Yeah.
Chivalry is dead. So no. Homemaker is also dead. At least in my household.
But I know you do it too often, she notices.
There are no pink jobs or blue jobs in my home.
Nice, I like
they
that.
They are all whatever color I...
Well, that's how I've categorized it. If my genitals can't do it, then it's not a gendered job.
What was it last week? You said you wanted to fix the chair of woe.
I did. I want to fix the chair of woe.
All right.
If you do it with your genitals, I'm just that we video it because we could fundraise for some new equipment.
For sure.
I was going to say, that could probably bring some money in.
Bring some money in.
Well, at that point, I'd be able to buy a new chair.
I've already got...
we wouldn't need to do it.
Clickbait title.
What?
What is it?
Just like the BuzzFeed title. It's like, woman drops her pants. What she does next to the chair will blow your mind. Holy shit, she leveled it right out. This is crazy.
That one leg is all fixed. I've never seen anybody do that with a hammer, but damn.
How's she turning that wrench?
That's control, my friend. That's control.
Yeah, that is one magic vagina.
Your video will start after this Kegels advertisement.
Oh, actually, if my vagina was that useful, I wouldn't have to go to work in the morning.
Oh, man.
I'd have a job doing it.
How are we going to put that in the... Oh, shit. Yeah. Okay, so back to remaking. That
yes,
was
okay.
Awesome. I feel like they need to be trying to kill each other throughout the whole movie.
Like, I'd like to make it...
If you're going
to
be terrible people, then be terrible
a
people.
A thriller would
commit
be fun.
Commit to it.
A thriller would be an exciting way to use this, right?
Yeah.
Like, what's that?
A cat and mouse game for...
Single
white female?
Yes.
Yes.
This movie is like a shitty version of Single White Female.
There you go. We need
that
to record
the
morning.
That was remade as Maleficent.
Nice. It's weird. Like, yeah. Like, as you're pointing out, there's a lot of movies that share aspects of this movie.
That work.
Yeah. But this one, they just shoved everything in and it doesn't go, it doesn't mesh.
Thinking of the ones that don't work in my mind, this movie, Maleficent, because now it's my mission to trash it for the remainder of this podcast.
I enjoyed it because there was a dragon.
Do you find, and I think you had touched on this really briefly when we first started talking about it, but do you think that this movie would have worked better if we saw it from Cameron Diaz's eyes? Do you think that movies that follow the villain are less effective because as an audience member, and like I'm you're the same as me, we love our villains, mm-hmm. but I don't want to see the movie through the villain's eyes because I'm not a villainous or mischievous person. Well, not villainous anyway. Mm-hmm. And
because we don't want her to get the guy.
We don't want to see these things happen through, or I don't want to see these things happen through their eyes because the horrible and awkward and distressful and evil stuff that they're doing, like, I can't identify with that. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, and the same with Maleficent, her motivations didn't make sense to me. Mm-hmm. So I had a hard time staying in the movie because, you know, you're not that kind of person. You're not that character. And with movies like this, especially romantic movies, maybe that is where they broke the mold, is that it's told from the villain of the film is Julia Roberts, and you're seeing it from her perspective. But because as a regular audience member, you can't imprint yourself in that role, you can't get engrossed in the movie, and therefore it doesn't work and you dislike it.
Yeah, now, if you switch that viewpoint to Cameron Diaz, who's already threatened by this person before she even meets her.
That would have been a way better beginning.
Yeah. I'm like, you think about it, you want to invite your best friend? Wait, that best friend? Oh, shit.
Yeah.
No, like, just the conflict that already arises there, that's interesting.
And if you could make
it's an emotional conflict.
You could also make, the Julia Roberts character, more just emotionally intimidating. Like she's just so put together. She's got a career on track. She's doing all this stuff. Make her intimidating on another level, not just for her underhandedness, but, have Cameron Diaz I'm not going to be this woman.
I like when it comes down to just everybody being more likable. That's what would make this movie, mm-hmm. is every character just needs to be a little bit more likable. Because that's the only thing stopping you from being on anyone's side.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're these super rich, not very nice people that seem to have entitlement issues. And they're just not relatable to the average person.
I think you'd have to eliminate the character of Mike completely and implant a character that it would make sense that there's an attraction from all angles.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Because he isn't likable, he isn't endearing, he has no positive... I made a note of it, I was 34 minutes in and we hadn't had a positive moment, and by that time Julia Roberts is already there. And the family seemed to love him.
Yeah, yes. that blew me away.
Like, what you could do, and this is probably, it would go more into the thriller aspect, is that Michael is a sociopath. Like, sociopaths are supposed to be, charismatic and charming, and they fool a lot of people. But they didn't really put that, they didn't make that apparent. That's what they should have done with him. Mm. It should have been,
he should have been Patrick Bateman.
Yeah, he should have been. He really should have been, because he is. We know he is.
Okay, well, now we know who's cast as Michael.
Yep. Yeah. Christian Bale.
Christian Bale could totally pull that off. But, it's got to be.
You want to get married? We'll wear a movie.
We could just bring everybody in from the third Batman movie.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. Okay, fine. Casting done.
So the gay friend can be Bane?
he's got the voice.
Is she chasing you?
That would be amazing.
You know who? He's like, he's chasing me. You're chasing him. Who's chasing you?
What would happen if we broke up the wedding? Well, it would be very painful for you. Terrible. Wow, I gotta hate this. Let's never talk about Batman Dark Knight Rises ever again. Fuck that.
But as this movie?
As this movie.
Yeah.
See, that would be amazing. Single movie can become... My best friend's wedding, as long as you eliminate the elements of my best friend's wedding from your script. Any movie. Aliens is a better romance. At least I believed the alien wanted to get with Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah, you're right.
And Jonesy was a great best friend.
I know.
Jonesy. Yeah. Every movie, seriously. It just goes too far in Prometheus because she gets knocked up.
Some fan has got to do a new trailer, but they got to piece it together with Batman Dark Knight Rises. Yeah.
Batman Dark Knight Rises, or recut it so that it's like a thriller. Like, did you ever see the one where Sleepless in Seattle's like a thriller? that remade trailer.
Oh yeah, there's a bunch of those.
There's a whole bunch of them, but like remake it like that, it'd be like it would work. You could do it. Just put the right like.
I feel like I need to go on an editing exercise at this point.
I watch stuff like that, and I just did a free workshop by M Media here in Calgary on video image. What does he call it? It's like art with video.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And it's like manipulation of a video image for the sake of art. And anyway, there was this song that he had played for us from 93 by a group called the Emergency Broadcast Company.
Nice.
And it was a song edited together by clips from the Emergency Broadcast Company, like real clips.
Oh, wow.
And it like it just gets more and more and more intense. And I mean, that still goes on today on YouTube and stuff. And I just like, why are those people not in Hollywood? Because I've watched some movies with some pretty freaking shaky editing. And it's like, I know there's a guy on YouTube cutting together comedy trailers for The Shining that would do a better job of this feature film than whoever they had do it.
I made a great trailer of Brokeback Mountain. They're doing like lots of Brokeback parodies. I did Point Break. It works.
Sure. I can't.
I'll see that sometimes.
It's like, and it's like going, you, I can see it. It's right there between it. Like, yeah, it totally works.
I just want to see this recut with the trailer for Alien. You know, you get Julia Roberts walking into room, and all you hear is, game over.
Oh,
and that chick stuck to the ice sculpture. Yeah, totally, it works.
That's what she needs to be at like the end of the movie. Game over.
Well, the way every time she makes a panic phone call, she does sound like that anyway.
I know,
this isn't working.
I know.
Stop burning up your cell phone minutes. You're giving yourself brain cancer.
There's,
but they're all rich, so it's fine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's several things. You got to change perspective. You got to make them more likable. But, I think the key thing is Michael has to be desirable.
And honestly, it also needs, it's a romantic comedy.
Yeah, it needs
There needs
comedy.
To actually to be some He's, funny moments yeah. other than some slapstick that is ill-placed.
Misplaced slapstick and awkwardness is not funny.
Yeah, that opening scene of
Falling
everybody...
down is not funny.
Yeah, that establishing scene, like, put Gordon Ramsay in there. The meanest man on the planet is scared of her. Now you're establishing her character just with that.
Yeah.
Right there. Like, here's somebody we already know is an asshole, at least on television. And, you know, if he's fearful of this person, that also sets her tone.
Yeah.
Right away.
And you can have it, like, she talks about being on a book tour, and we never see any evidence of this at any point.
No, I don't think we ever see her holding a book.
No.
We have no evidence she can even read a book.
No. Oh, no. Right, no, she can read a book because she just talks like a book.
Writers, am I right?
Yeah, I like the idea of coming at it from Cameron Diaz's perspective.
Yeah.
It would work as a movie if you were coming from a protagonist.
Yeah, I would make her a little more well-rounded, this 1940s golf look that she had.
I know, right?
I think I'd make her have her actual personality outside of the dutiful housewife that she kind of
and
feels like she's
trying to be. And to be fair, if you're doing it from her perspective, you have to make her a character, which would be useful.
Yeah.
But also, you could also totally now. Like,
it makes
totally
me wonder if Julia Roberts saw where her career was going to go and was trying to undermine it by recommending
Maybe,
her.
Maybe, yeah. Because Cameron Diaz, like this is one of the things that helped start her on her career.
Yeah,
like that
was
really
one.
Well.
Like what Mask was in '94, and that was her first role.
Yeah,
that
this is '97.
For a couple years
so
later.
This is still pretty early
like,
in her.
Yeah, then she was on definitely uphill trajectory from here. Like that's this is what the one of
the
ones
the Stiller
that did
comedies,
it.
And she had the Charlie's Angels.
Yeah.
And then she disappeared.
Oh, wait. That means she's been in lots of movies that did good money but weren't actually good.
Yes.
Oh.
Like Charlie's Angels.
That was where I was going with that, yeah.
Crispin Glover.
And the only people that were really great in this movie had such small parts.
I know.
As you said, Walsh and Giamatti.
The fathers. Too. Yeah, the other guy who was the other father.
And
yeah.
Emmett Walsh did literally nothing. At least Paul Giamatti
he had
got
one line.
A minute of speaking.
Yeah.
He didn't even say. He sings a line briefly.
No, Emmett Walsh? Yeah, like when they're at the baseball game, like, hey, how you doing? She's like, hey, Papa, what's your face?
Yeah, and he's such a good... Have you ever seen... it's a really early Coen movie. I want to say it's called Body Double. No, that's De Palma.
That's De Palma.
It is called... I will figure
out... Miller's Crossing? No.
It's a really, really great early Coen Brothers movie, and Emmett Walsh is like this kind of like hitman-y type character, and he gets hired on, and they try to like turn it around.
Barton Fink?
It's...
Man, you need
Blood
too
Simple.
Much?
It's called Blood Simple.
Okay,
Blood
yes. Simple. I've heard of that.
You know, like, that's one of the ones I haven't seen.
Amazingly fantastic in it.
Yeah. I think it's like, yeah, the underuse of the really good people. Do you think there's like cut of this movie where there's like a lot more scenes with them? Like they probably signed on because they'd have lines.
Yeah. Well, yeah, when you get in actors of that caliber, I guess maybe Giamatti wasn't a thing yet, but...
No, but M. Emmett Walsh was.
He was, yeah. I'm wondering if maybe there was a lot of scenes that got cut.
Yeah, and eventually he just shows up his face one time and that's it.
Okay, so I think we've basically said none of us really want to recast much, but...
Oh, and what I was getting into before is,
yeah,
like,
sorry.
Now you could probably do it so, like, my best friend's wedding, you could be, like, the gay best friend doesn't have to be the best... Like, the gay best friend could be having a big gay wedding.
You could
do it that way.
I thought it might be interesting where the girl is in love with the gay guy.
Yeah. Or like
the best,
some guy,
best friend
or somebody she used to date.
And this eliminates Michael.
Yeah, somebody she used to date is the person who's marrying her gay best friend.
So she's
like,
trying to win the gay best friend that she loves, but he's gay. So
yeah.
That's just never going to work. And yeah, actually, that would make for some good comedy.
And
I would leave Rupert Everett in there because he's
awesome.
He's a good job, yeah.
For sure. And like it's sort of, yeah, you could have that, but it might also
be... That's a very modern take on it.
It's a modern take on it. But the other thing about it too would be, I would like to see a movie where it's like my best friend's wedding, but like you realize like a lot of the shortcomings of your best friend, like, but try to help him get past that so he could be a good husband or wife or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
That would be, I would like to see that where like she comes to the realization, like going, he's really inflexible and behaving like a dick. I got to do something about this.
Yeah.
Like I would love for that to be the realization, not that she's in love with him, but the realization that she's like, oh my God, like I'm breaking up this wedding, but for like really good reasons.
Yeah. I think there's lots of ways to improve it. And I actually really like that angle.
Yeah. That's not a bad angle. And then since M. Emmett Walsh is dead, we'll just, like, use my stand-in old guy for everything, Christopher Walken, and he can, like, be the guy's butt. So, you want to get gay married, that's cool. It's a modern time.
I got nothing against it. Hey, I've been on record saying I wanted to be a cat. Because they have tails. Be what you want to be.
Be what you want to be.
But yeah, like a nice big gay wedding, I think it'd be fun. Like I just
what movie have we remade that wouldn't be better with Christopher Walken? Really?
We were having a tough time with Used Cars.
Hey, I got a 72 Pontiac out back. Why don't you hop in and take it for a spin?
Ooh, best of the best.
Best of the best. Tommy, pop it, Tommy. Ow. My arm, it's hanging out. I just pop it, Tommy. What's Darth Vader doing here?
See, now everybody, that forces you to go back to listen to our back matter and just, insert Christopher Walken in every episode we've done. This is episode 25.
We like to call it a walk improvement.
Yeah.
We are now.
How would you walk improve this?
It's because I can't do a good Julia Roberts impersonation, and I feel like I need to sing and do an impersonation for a while. I already sang, so
it's nice. The walking's good. I like the walking. But yeah, it's
just keep walking.
This I know what they tried to. You can remake a romantic comedy, and you can do something new with it. But, like, think it through, I think, is the lesson of this movie.
Any last thoughts about this movie?
I agree with that. My thought was that they spun it around and tried to put it from the villain's perspective, made it not work, ended up being a shitty movie.
Yeah, I agree with that. Brittany, you got anything to add?
Yeah, I agree with that. Make people likable. That's, you know, the key to most movies. Like, that would have been make somebody in that movie likable, other than Rupert Everett, you know?
So yeah. Now, this episode's, we're recording this on January 31st.
Yes.
It will be airing near the end of February. So for us, this week, Abe Vigoda passed away, who we talked about in The Stuff.
I know.
Yeah,
so
you know, this month, I tell you.
The age of 94. It's like, I don't know. It's like,
I think he was always the age of 94.
Like, it's like, yeah. 2016 is just having a clearance sale on anything good.
Yeah, and you know, it has me a little worried, because as of this recording, Black Sabbath is on their final tour.
Oh, no.
And Ozzy canceled his show in Edmonton last night, and the show for Calgary is canceled due to sinusitis. But when you're old and you get a sinus infection, it can quickly turn into bronchitis, pneumonia, and death. So has me concerned at the rate everybody's dropping, you know.
And, well, I think Ozzy's been clinically dead for 20, 30 years already, yeah. But it'd be very sad to make it official.
Yeah, I totally would. And I have tickets for The Who, so I... That's like throw a dart at the board.
For God's sake, guys, keep an eye on your old rock stars and actors.
Wrap them in bubble wrap. Don't let them out in the neighborhood.
Like, I don't know, maybe cryogenically freeze them and we'll take them out in 2017 when we're pretty sure they'll be okay.
Yeah, you know what I think it is with all of these actors dying, like, all this month or whatever? I think that's, like, a bizarre coincidence. But the thing with, like, big actors like these people and musicians is that it's so impactful because there's nobody to replace them.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, there isn't another Alan Rickman. There isn't another Lemmy. There's
not going to be another Bowie.
Well, yeah, there probably wasn't even a Bowie while Bowie was here. He didn't know what was going on. But, yeah, you're like, there's just no people who are so, I wish I could think of the word, like,
extraordinary?
Yeah, like, culturally important. Nobody's contributing to culture like these guys are. And it may be like a pop culture or whatever, but like...
At least not in a positive way. I mean, how many leaked, I air quote, porn videos can you do to make yourself famous? And I feel like
only about 400 followers. So
yeah, I feel like the pop culture icons right now are popular for really bad things. Yeah. Like, they're just not people you want to look up to or contributing in any way.
There we go. Yeah.
Yeah. We are now in a generation where people becoming infamous rather than famous for contributing in positive ways.
And it's weird. It's this whole meta thing. Their existence has made them famous. Thus, they are more famous with their existence. Their continued existence continues to keep them famous for some reason.
Yeah. And they shouldn't be. Like, people should be recognized for the work and the legacy that they leave, and it should be like lasting and important and like well thought. Like, you know, Bowie and all these guys, like, they dedicated their lives to one thing and made it great and enriched millions of lives, and no one's doing that.
Yeah.
But somebody will, you know.
Well, but yeah, somebody will. Hilton's a DJ now, so I could be totally wrong.
We could be. There could be some, like, somebody, people are noticing, like, a generation that isn't us, a younger generation may have those people that are that to them.
Yeah. You know, it's too bad, like, somebody like a kid like Justin Bieber when he was a kid and everybody was really wild by, and now he's probably more famous for being a douchebag. I couldn't even name a song, but I could tell you the latest antic.
Yeah.
Because he's been just a fucking bitch boy.
Douche nozzle.
Yeah, and like, I mean, he could have had the grounding to become the next Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
But he won't. He won't leave a legacy or a lasting impression. He'll be a throwaway.
I think it's because previously, when you were in sort of like the entertainment industry, it wasn't people covering everything you did all the time. It was sort of like, unless you produce something, nobody gave it.
Yeah, now it's constant coverage. You know, you can't get away from it now.
So you don't have to produce anything to still be.
Yeah. 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 I mean, it's constant scrutiny now and it's instantaneous delivery to the audience. So it's maybe it's just getting harder.
I think it's a bastardization of purpose where Bowie didn't set out to be a famous rock star. Lemmy didn't set out to be a famous rock star. Alan Rickman didn't set out to be a famous
actor. They just wanted to be good at what they wanted to do.
And that's the difference, is the generation coming up now, it's like, well, I want to be famous. I want to be recognized. I want the notoriety.
I never want to be famous. Famous looks like it sucks ass. I just want to be respected for what I do.
Yeah,
like, exactly. That's what I'd want.
And even then, it's hard to be respected. Like, you can be good at what you do and have that, and people are like, because everybody has a voice now, they're like, you're an idiot. Like, they'll go on some rant on how you're stupid and dumb, and it's all spelt wrong because it's done by an idiot. Like, every idiot can say something.
Well, that's the thing, too. Is like,
welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, I know. There's so much of everything everywhere. So, you know, you've got, you know, you can go on YouTube, you want to see somebody sing, you can go on da-da-da, and there's so many little pop stars coming in and out of everything like that, and you have so much access to their lives. Like, you can go in and see every little thing they do. You can follow them on Twitter, you can, they live tweet their Sunday shits. Like, it's insane to me. Mm-hmm. So you have so much access to this that it takes away that little bit of mystery that, like, that Bowie had. I wonder what, I wonder why. You just know everything, and it becomes less and less. It's so, you know, so oversaturated with nothingness.
Yeah.
So there's nobody that's extraordinary. There's nobody that's, not to say that there won't be, but it has to be so different because you have access to anything you want all the time. So it takes a lot more, I think. Not to say that it can't happen again, but it'll take a lot.
Yeah.
I think it's staggering that, you know, a population that wants and desires and could benefit from those people work the hardest at destroying them rather than embracing them.
Oh, yeah. Like, it seems nowadays to be an idiot is right. Like, right. People enjoy that. Like, to be consciously and completely ignorant of stuff is something that's liked and treasured.
Celebrated, almost.
It's celebrated. It's not something. But yeah, but that's the worst thing to celebrate. If you show any intelligence or any aptitude, people are like, oh, they're too good for us. Yeah, they are. Sorry. Yeah. Hate to break it to you, but yeah, that's the truth.
Exceptional people do exceptional things and lead exceptional lives and have a lasting impression.
Yeah. And it's like, I'm sorry, you're not going to be that rock star and you're not going to be that great, amazing person. You're just not. Statistically, it was never in your favor.
And if you're sitting there whining about it, complaining about it, trashing it on the internet, you were never meant to be that person anyway.
For sure.
Because you should be focusing like 100%. 110%, even though it's just statistically impossible, to do whatever it is that you know you're good at. Everybody's good at something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you'll get, you know, recognized for that, hopefully.
And to do it, like, if you love something enough and do it and, like, feel the joy of it, you actually don't really give that much of a shit about doing, like, other people's opinions are like, no, this is my thing, and this is what I want to do.
Yeah, just stay firm and keep doing it. I had, like, a strange conversation about Monopoly today. I met somebody who played competition Monopoly. I didn't know that was a thing. That's a thing.
Cool.
And yeah, he apparently, like, went very far with it and whatever. And he said, well, you know, there's new rules and it speeds it up. And then the strategy is to, like, find a way to cripple and deplete your opponent and like get all their money and then they're out, right? Force them into bankruptcy. And I'm like, okay, I understand that, but like, and I know that Monopoly at its core is a socialist tool that was meant to show the evils of capitalism, where only one person can be successful and everybody else suffers for it. And I think that's a skewed way of looking at things, but I'm not a socialist. So, but, and then, you know, the way I look at it is like Monopoly is an excellent tool to show that, you know, there are ways that you can succeed if you think about things the right way. You know, there's a strategy to win at Monopoly that can work in real life, in real estate and investing and stuff as well. But I mean, it could apply to anything. And so, like, when I play that game and now we're thinking all meta about Monopoly, I was like, it never occurred to me that the game was about one person is going to get it all and we're all going to suffer. What it says to me is like, well, what can I do to be that one person? How can I get to be the best and succeed? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the way that you should look at that, and that you should look at everything, and that we're getting away from that, you know, where it's like, yeah, it's statistically impossible for anyone to become famous. You know, I mean, years from now, people will look back at the greatness of this podcast. But and whether they do or don't, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't, you know, give it our best. And I feel like we do. But everything you do, you should always just push and do your best. And then maybe one day you can go to your best friend's wedding. I'm Jeff. Good night, everybody.
The more you know.
Do-do-do, star rainbow.
Okay, well, you guys can always be part of that conversation as well. You can join the conversation over on Twitter at Invasion Remake or on Facebook. Of course, we're Invasion of the Remake at Facebook. And like, share, subscribe, all that stuff. And of course, you can email us directly at invasiontheremake@gmail.com. And if you want to support the show, right now, we don't want your money. We just want you to tell more people about it. Share it with as many people as you can. But, you know, try... Five friends. If you don't have five friends, then it, make sure you tell the guy you're passing on the street. Whatever.
If you're laughing on the train,
remember to grab him firmly and yell so he hears you.
That's right.
Invasion. What?
Make us the new popular show on iTunes. Yes. So go to iTunes, subscribe, and or Stitcher or Player FM or wherever you found us. But while you're there, give us a 5-star rating and write just a quick blurb. That would be awesome. That's all we really want from you. And because we give you 8 to 10 hours a month. So
yes,
just, you know, give us that little throwback. That would be awesome of you because, you know, our invaders are awesome.
And Valentine's Day is coming up. So it's a good way to show your love.
That's right.
Yeah. Even pretend the stars are hearts and we're dying.
Even though I think this is going to be a couple days after when it gets posted.
Yeah, probably. You know.
Okay, but February is the month of love. It is a leap year this year, so there is extra love.
She says it with such hate.
Yeah, it's yeah.
It's a month of love, people.
I'm the villain.
Love
of
me.
That.
Love
I'm the
me.
Villain of February.
And it's Oscar's month, so we're going to be talking about stuff like that as well.
We're going to be talking about nominations and exemplary stuff in the industry is what we're going to be talking about. Because if we're going to be talking about the other stuff, I'm out.
Well, no, I think we're going to do Invasion of the Retrospective, and we'll just talk about Oscars over the history, our favorite films that have been nominated or won or didn't win. Or
Can we talk about the ones that were robbed?
And I do want to do predictions.
DiCaprio?
Just to see how we did.
Yeah.
And let's face it, I think most of us haven't seen a lot of these movies, which should make things far more interesting.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I'm going to create a complex, like, numerical generation system. And if any one of them comes up with 7, then...
You're going to moneyball it?
I'm moneyballing it.
All right. So I think that'll be next week. We're just going to wing it.
Because that's always worked for
like
me.
Like, we're so structured all the time.
That's right.
We're super structured. If you feel we got too existential today...
That's right. And then we'll get into a remake the one after that, and then we get into my special birthday episode.
Yeah.
So that's going to be one I've been waiting on to do.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm not going to leak that just yet, so...
You'll have to keep listening.
It'll be a fun one, that's for sure, and I know Jeff's going to love that one as well.
It's going to be Creepshow.
It's going to be good.
It's not going to be Creepshow.
It's Creepshow. I want my cake! No?
No, you can do that on your birthday.
Sweet.
Nice.
Everybody can have a birthday episode.
Oh, cool. All right.
Yeah, it's not just me.
Nice. I don't know. I don't celebrate birthdays, so I don't think about it.
Well, we can here.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Now, next week when we do our Oscar stuff, we're also going to have some drinking rules when you have your Oscar party.
Yes.
So be aware. Take that into consideration when you host your Oscar party, and we will have our Oscar rules and see how many of you survived our Oscar drinking rules as well. So, yeah, we'll see you next week. I'm Jason.
I'm Jeff.
Oh, actually, whoa.
Yeah, we need one more thing.
Yes. Brittany,
yeah.
If people want to get a hold of you, you got shows to promote, how can they find out about that?
I am on Facebook and Twitter, and Brittany Lysing at Twitter, whatever.
The
at sign, and then Brittany Lysing there. And you can check me out on Yuck Yucks, usually posts when I'm at the club. So
nice.
There, yeah.
And drink High River? No, that's the one.
Yeah, I'll be in High River the 19th. February. I'll be at Yuck Yucks the second this week coming up here. So,
which is
if you have the podcast, you've missed it. Yeah. So
That's right.
Why don't you live in the now?
That's right. We like to record in the past.
Yeah.
Welcome to
we're squandering our time machine for nothing.
We're just getting used to it.
We'll go back and kill Hitler? Well, we should talk about my best friend's wedding prior to that. God, it's ran out of batteries.
All right. Well, again, thanks for joining us. I'm Jason.
I'm Jeff again.
I'm Trish.
I'm Brittany.
And we're out of here.
Bye-bye, guys.
The moment I wake up. Before I put on my makeup.
I say a little prayer for you.
While combing my hair now. While wondering what dress to wear now.
I say a little prayer for you.
Forever and ever, you stay in my heart, and I will love you forever and ever. You never will part, oh how I love you together. Forever, that's how it must be to live with.